The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of Redleg Nation Radio. I'm your host, Chad Dawson of RedlegNation.com, easy for me to say. Joining us again today, our good buddy Doug Gray from RedsMinorLeagues.com. How you doing these days, Doug?
Oh, pretty good. The Reds are winning, so I don't have too much to complain about. How about yourself?
Oh, about the same. It always makes life just a little bit better when the Reds are playing well, and the Reds are playing well right now. Fantastic, really, if you ask me. I'm very pleased. 29-18 at the moment. Actually, only good enough for a tie for second place in the National League Central, amazingly, behind the Red Hot Cardinals and the Pirates, who will fade at some point. I'm sure of that. But the team's playing well. You know, I don't have very many complaints about a 29-18 start, and I especially don't have any complaints about the fact that they've got a run differential of 57, scored 57 more runs than they've allowed, second only to those stupid Cardinals in the majors, actually, for that stat. What do you think about how the Reds are playing right now? Are you as excited as I am?
I mean, I can't say for sure I'm as excited as you are, but I'm pretty excited. I feel that, you know, with where the team's at, and, you know, I feel that most people don't feel that they're even playing up to their potential at this point, and for how good they're doing, you know, that really says how good this team is and can be. You know, I know that you look at the standings and they're in second place right now, but they've still got one of the best records in baseball, and they've done it without Johnny Cueto for most of the season and without the guy they thought was going to be their cleanup hitter. So I'm pretty excited with where the team's at right now, and, you know, I think that they're going to continue playing this well, if not better, the rest of the season.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, the team's playing well, and I know that some people are maybe not fully on board with this bunch, but third best record, or I guess there are only two teams that have more wins, is the best way to say that, than the Reds do at this point. And certainly the Reds have one of the are tied for the second best record in the National League. Of course, again, the team they're tied with and the team that's ahead of them are both in the Central. So you look at the standings, and they're not up at the top of the division, so that may be disappointing to some people. And I hate losing to St. Louis as much as anyone, but let's talk about this road trip the Reds just got back from. A 7-2 road trip. And, you know, the Reds had started the year, obviously, on fire at home, and they've been 16-6 at home this season, but on the road started off pretty poorly against some decent teams. Now, the Reds come back off this latest road trip with a 7-2 record, as I said, swept two of the teams on the road trip, the Mets and the Marlins. And let's concede the Mets and the Marlins aren't exactly world beaters, but still, you got to take a 7-2 road trip anytime you can get it, am I right?
You're right. You are definitely right. I mean, what's the old saying? Go 500 on the road and have a winning record at home, and you're doing all right. So, you know, the Reds are back over 500 on the road. You know, like you said, they started out really poorly on the road to begin the season, but, you know, they're back over 500 on the road, and you can't complain about that.
No, you can't. And the Reds are beating up on some of the poor sisters of the National League, I guess you could say, but teams like, as we said, the Marlins and the Mets and the Cubs. And I guess there have been some fans who have pointed out, well, it's, you know, what the Reds have done, 29-18 overall, 11 games over. They didn't get 11 games over until mid-June last year. Not as impressive because they haven't done it against the better teams. I guess my point there, and I'll see whether you agree with this or not, is that every good team, they're supposed to beat up on the poorer teams that they play. And no team plays exceptionally well against the quote-unquote good teams. I mean, that's why they're the good teams. Teams don't have great winning percentages against them. So I'm less concerned. You may think I should be more concerned, but I'm happy about the fact the Reds are taking care of business against the teams they're supposed to be taking care of business about. And it just doesn't concern me that in a handful of games here, maybe they haven't looked great against, you know, the Cardinals and the Nationals and some of the better teams in the National League. What's your opinion on that subject?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. I mean, you know, it's May 23rd right now. You know, not having a good record against other teams with a winning record, that doesn't really mean anything right now. You know, it could just be completely random chance at this point. You know, they've got, what, 18 games against other teams with winning records right now. You know, that's not really enough to, you know, take anything away from unless you're trying really hard to look for something just to, I guess, have something to talk about. You know, this team's really good. I think that everybody knows this team's really good. And, you know, like you said, no team, no matter how good they are, is going to have a big, you know, winning percentage against other good teams. It's just not going to happen. That's why they're good teams. They don't lose, you know, day in and day out to anybody. So, you know, I'm with you. I'm not concerned about it at all.
Well, we've talked about the Reds generally, I guess, and the general consensus amongst us anyway is that, hey, this bunch is they're playing pretty well and they're in good shape right now for the rest of the season. Let's dig into some of the specifics a little bit more and discuss some individuals. Let's begin with this pitching staff. There's a lot of storylines with respect to this pitching staff that we can discuss. The first one I want to talk about has been a little bit of a topic of conversation. Well, it's been a big topic of conversation over the last couple weeks, which is that fifth starter spot. And I guess when the fifth starter spot is such a topic of conversation, it means that you've got a pretty good rotation in a lot of ways, and the Reds do. But obviously, Mike Leake is the Reds' fifth starter, and Johnny Cueto came back this week. And, of course, Johnny Cueto is he's the purported ace of this staff, although Matt Latos may have a thing or two to say about that. And so somebody had to go, and Reds fans had – chose sides. Was it going to be Tony Cingrani? Was it going to be Mike Leake that had to go? My stated opinion was that it was Mike Leake was definitely going to stay, just based upon the fact the way that the Reds have done things in the past. Mike Leake had been around. Cingrani was sort of the new guy. And Cingrani, by all accounts, has some things still to work on. But Cingrani looked fabulous in his six major league starts. First six major league starts, 2-0 record, 3.27 ERA. And a guy that performs like that gets sent to the minors. My opinion is that really says something sweet about the Reds' pitching staff and the future of this club, that a guy like that can get sent down to work on some things. Were you surprised that Cingrani was sent down? What did you think about that decision? What would you have done? And you know, I want to hear what Cingrani's doing tonight as well. I'm going to dig into that one.
Well, I'll start off with what he's doing tonight. So far, you know, he's got two no-hit innings, one walk, three strikeouts. He's thrown 27 pitches. So far, so good. As far as the decision, you know, I think the Reds made the right one. Even if Mike Leake had only been, you know, so-so rather than as good as he's been so far, I think that he would have gone down. You know, I'm not sure who made the decision for the Reds to set up the game plan when Tony Cingrani started, but he threw to three different catchers, and to every catcher he threw 80% fastballs or more. And that tells me that somebody with the Reds organization decided that, you know, he did not have the secondary pitches that they trusted enough for him to throw to major league hitters. And that right there just told me that no matter what the results were that he was getting, that they wanted to send him back down to work on whatever it was that they wanted him to work on. You know, somebody didn't trust him enough to, you know, go out there and throw changeups and breaking balls to hitters. And, you know, eventually they're going to catch up with anybody with a fastball, you know, that's, I guess, not Aroldis Chapman-like when he's out there throwing 100-plus every pitch. And you just can't do that as a starter. So it didn't surprise me that they sent him down. It's the same move I would have made. I think I would have had a different game plan than they had. I would have had them mixed in off-speed stuff a little bit more. But, you know, I looked at it in depth after he got sent down. And, you know, really, it's not that they hit his off-speed stuff so much. it's, you know, he was leaving it up in the zone a lot more often than you would like to see off-speed pitches. And I think it, you know, that's one of the things that he's going to need to work on when he's down there too, not just, you know, improving his curveball and his changeup, but, you know, the control and command of both of those pitches as well.
And you're right, he'll certainly need command and be able to locate those pitches if and when, and it's just a matter of when he gets an opportunity to come back to the major leagues. I think it was the right decision. Leake, of course, is the veteran in this scenario, which is hard to believe for a guy that's 25 years old, that he's the veteran in this scenario. But Leake has pitched very well. Let's not take anything away from him. Leake's 4-2 with a 3.25 ERA at this point. And I think even if he hadn't pitched so well, and of course his last couple starts have been pretty good, got that ERA down, but I think even if he hadn't pitched so well, Cingrani is going down no matter what. And people wanted to create a controversy. Is it going to be Leake? Is it going to be Cingrani? I don't think it was ever a question in the mind of the Reds, especially so once you consider, as you said, his pitch selection, in the big leagues, really gave you an indication that the Reds didn't trust his off-speed stuff as much. And so he's got some things to work on. Kid's 23 years old. He's going to be in Cincinnati at some point full-time. It was fun watching him while he was here, though. Good to see a young guy like that come up and really, really impress. But, man, what a tough nut to crack, this Reds rotation. You got Matt Latos, 4-0, 3.17 ERA. Bronson Arroyo, 4-4, 3.28. Homer Bailey, 2-3, 3.09 ERA. Leake, of course, we said the 3.25. And then Johnny Cueto, 2-2 with a 3.22 ERA. The best ERA out of the six starters that have been there this year is old man Bronson Arroyo at 3.28. I mean, I can barely even, after the years that we've seen of some of these guys, Jimmy Anderson, Jimmy Haynes, some of these jokers we've seen come through the Reds rotation. Can you even fathom how good these six pitchers have been that have started the games for the Reds this year?
Only because I've seen it with my own eyes, but, you know, if you had told me, you know, 2 or 3 years ago that the Reds could get, you know, six starters that could, you know, put up ERAs all under 3.30, you know, I just started laughing in your face. There's no way I could have believed that. It's amazing to see. I mean, yeah, you know, some of these guys are, you know, they were big prospects, but, you know, they don't always all pan out like that. I mean, we saw Homer Bailey struggle for years to get where he's at now. And, you know, I'm glad that he is where he is now, but, you know, not everybody takes that next step forward like he does. And, you know, it seems that, you know, Tony Cingrani not counting right now, that all of these guys, you know, outside of Bronson Arroyo, they're young and they've all already taken that step forward. And, you know, maybe Mike Leake isn't quite there yet. Maybe he is. We're not sure because, you know, last year he wasn't there and it's still pretty early. But, you know, as of right now, all of these guys are getting the job done and relatively really young. And that's really impressive to see.
Oh, it's outstanding. And you hit on the one thing that makes me, if you're not excited enough about those numbers that I just discussed, if that doesn't excite you completely, you hit on the other subject that just blows me away when it comes to what the Reds really have over the next few years this bunch. Bronson Arroyo, 36, obviously. He's the old man of the staff. But then Johnny Cueto, Homer Bailey, 27 years old. Matt Latos, Mike Leake, 25 years old. Tony Cingrani, 23 years old. These are young guys. I mean, these are guys that should have really solid years ahead of them for the next several years. And it really gives you a little bit of comfort knowing that we have this potential staff to look forward to for the next few years. Does it amaze you as much as it amazes me just to have that many, you know, five really young guys still?
Yeah, it's really impressive what they've done. And, you know, I think that a lot of the credit can go to Brian Price as well. You know, when he came in, you know, he was touted as one of the better pitching coaches in baseball. But, you know, I don't think that anybody expected the kind of results that he's been able to get, you know, from not just the guys in the rotation, but also some of the guys from the bullpen. I mean, think about what he's been able to do with Alfredo Simon, who basically got let go for free, and the Reds picked him up for nothing, you know, last year. And all he's done for the Reds since then is put up an ERA of about 3 and, you know, 80-plus innings out of the bullpen. You know, he's just been able to get the most out of just about every pitcher that's come through since he's been here.
Well, I agree. I don't know of any other way to look at it other than to give Brian Price real credit for what we've seen. And again, you talk about some of these younger pitchers, having a guy like Price who can sort of guide them through these what you would call formative years in the major leagues, and I think he deserves credit with Homer Bailey. Homer Bailey is a completely different pitcher than he has ever been. He's he's aggressive. He's confident on the mound. And you got guys like Mike Leake, who we hope, as you said, we don't know yet, but it looking like he may have taken a little bit of a step forward this year. We hope so. And then, of course, everybody talks about Matt Latos possibly being an ace, and I want to talk about that in a moment. But, you know, Latos has really he's a young guy. He's a guy that needs some of that guidance, perhaps. Let me ask you what you think about this question. Who's the ace of this staff, Johnny Cueto or Matt Latos? Or somebody else, but I think those are probably the top two. Who's the ace here?
Well, I'm going to throw Homer Bailey's name in the mix. I was actually talking with somebody the other day, and I decided to look up the stats. Since last year, the difference between Matt Latos and Homer Bailey in ERA is 0.03. So they're basically the exact same ERA, and they've thrown five fewer innings than each other. And Homer Bailey's walked a few less and struck out a few more. And now this is counting their time in the playoffs as well. But they've basically been the exact same pitcher since Matt Latos became a Red. And, you know, I think that Homer Bailey gets overlooked a little bit in this conversation sometimes. I really don't know which guy I could pick. You know, long term, I'd probably say Matt Latos just because I don't know. I just lean towards him just a little bit more. I'm not entirely sure I trust Cueto over the long haul. But right now, you know, for the rest of this season, I really don't think I could pick one of those three guys. I think that any three of them could be better than any of the other two. And, you know, it really just all depends on, you know, where they wind up pitching. You know, maybe if one guy ends up with, you know, a few more starts at home and another guy gets a few starts in, you know, St. Louis and San Diego, bigger ballparks, you know, that might reflect a little bit better on his ERA. And in the end, you know, those extra few starts are going to make a difference. But, you know, I'm just glad that I can have a conversation where there's three guys on this staff where I can be like, oh, yeah, that guy can – he's the best guy in our rotation, and not be able to pick one.
Oh, yeah, you brought Bailey in that conversation. Probably I should have a moment ago. Absolutely. Especially with Homer Bailey, really 27 years old, you would think hitting his groove, hitting his prime years. Johnny Cueto is probably going to – I've been pretty vocal at Red Leg Nation about the fact that Bronson Arroyo has been my favorite Red for the last few years since Adam Dunn left. Actually, there was a brief interlude there where Edwin Encarnacion was my favorite, and I think that I'm justified now in admitting that Edwin Encarnacion was my favorite because look what type of a player he turned out has turned out to be. But since Encarnacion was traded to the Blue Jays, really, it's been Bronson Arroyo. And because I just love watching him pitch. I love the way he maneuvers the baseball, the way he changes arm angles and changes speeds. Fun to watch. In a lot of ways, Johnny Cueto is sort of not a similar type of pitcher. That's not true, but he's as fun to watch as anybody. Maybe that's just a function of the funky delivery he has, but I enjoy Johnny Cueto, watching Johnny Cueto. So I'm not off the Johnny Cueto bandwagon by any stretch of the imagination, but Matt Latos, this is a guy that over at ESPN.com, we did some preseason predictions, and I picked Latos to win the Cy Young this year. And that was a little bit of a, you know, stepping out on a limb, I guess. Latos pretty much justified it by the way he's pitched so far. He's, like I said, 4-0 with that excellent ERA, 3.17. He's also had a couple of saves that were blown for him. He could have had six wins at this point. So if I'm asking the question, Cueto or Latos, who's the ace? I might lean towards Latos. Certainly, Latos has such a bright future because he's 2 years younger than either Cueto or Bailey. But let me just give you some credit for calling out Homer Bailey on this. You know, I'm looking at Homer Bailey's numbers right now. Homer Bailey, he has the best ERA on the starting staff, 3.09. But what's sort of amazing is looking at his fielding independent pitching numbers. By far the best FIP on the staff, 2.86, which, you know, he's maybe pitched a little bit better than the 3.09 ERA. And he, of course, has the highest wins above replacement, WAR, on the Reds' start staff at this point. So Homer Bailey it probably has been better than I thought he's been so far. Of course, he's only 2-3. Those are the old stats that they used to look at to determine Cy Young, et cetera. But you've got a good point. Homer Bailey, can he keep this up all year?
I think so. I mean, you know, going back to last year, I mean, he had, you know, a rough stretch from the last start of July through August. You know, heading into his last start of July, his ERA was 3.5. And then, you know, over the next month, it was over 6. And so he really had to rebound late in the year, you know, and he threw his no-hitter. And, you know, he finished out the year strong, and, you know, he's basically done the exact same thing this year. You know, if you watch him pitch, I don't think anybody questions the stuff that's there. The stuff's kind of always been there. It's been more of a, you know, he hasn't been as refined as he is now. So I think that he's a guy that, you know, we're finally seeing him take, you know, that next big leap forward. And, you know, we've seen it for the past, you know, 13, 14 months at this point. I think that he just got overlooked and overshadowed by how good Johnny Cueto and Matt Latos were last year, that, you know, people didn't quite realize how good Homer Bailey was because those guys were just that good. They were a little bit better last year. And, you know, this year it's just that next step forward with his consistency.
You know, I at some point in the last couple of years, I began to make the argument that Homer Bailey, you know, he's probably not going to be the stud that everyone wanted him to be. And I tried to make the point that that's okay. You know, if his ceiling is a number three starter, there's a lot of value in a guy that's sort of a number three, number four starter if he can be fairly consistent. That's a guy that can stick in the major leagues. And the Reds fans shouldn't be disappointed that he's not the superstar ace that everyone expected him to be. And as a matter of fact, around the end of August last year, and I can't remember if I actually wrote the article or if I just did the research and never actually published it, but I was looking at Homer Bailey's numbers as compared to Mike Leake. And the question I was intending to answer in the post, and I should have gone back to look to see if I actually wrote this thing, was which one of these guys should start, get a start in the playoffs? And it was a real question at the end of August, because their numbers looked actually very similar. And as a matter of fact, the sort of peripheral numbers looked a tiny bit better for Mike Leake, as I recall. And then, of course, Homer Bailey has the wonderful September and October and has not skipped a beat this year. I'm becoming although I've been a huge fan of Homer Bailey, and one of the running themes that we've discussed on this podcast over the last 87 episodes has been, be patient with Homer Bailey. You know, we love this guy. He may actually, you know, he's probably not going to be an ace, but this is a guy that has potential for the next 2-3 years or so, maybe a legit number two starter in the big leagues, and I think that surprises a lot of people that he's actually been able to take that next step. He's got an exciting future all of a sudden, doesn't he?
He does. I think that, you know, he's finally living up to a lot of the hype that, you know, he had coming out of the draft and coming up out of the minor leagues. You know, I think that, you know, maybe some people expect him to be what, you know, Justin Verlander was, not so much this year. He's been having his problems this year. But, you know, in the past, I think that, you know, that's the kind of hype that people expected Homer Bailey to be, you know, because he has built up for so long, basically since the Reds had absolutely nothing at the major league level pitching-wise. And, you know, that, you know, not many people were ever going to be able to live up to something like that. But, you know, like you said, you know, if he turns out to be a number two starter in the major leagues, you know, that's just something that a lot of teams really don't have a legit number two starter on their team. You know, that's going to get him paid really well when he's a free agent. You know, that's another thing that the Reds are going to have to worry about is, you know, are they going to, not only are they going to be able to afford him, but, you know, are they going to have to choose between, you know, one, two, or three of these guys on who they want to keep and who they need to just, you know, I guess move on from, not so much because they want to, but because they don't have the money to.
Yeah, it's going to be and I don't envy Walt Jocketty, Cincinnati's general manager, for having to make those decisions. You're absolutely right. It's going to be a tough call how they're going to be able to afford all these guys and who they're going to choose if they can't afford them all. The highest ceiling of any of these starting pitchers, is there any question that the highest the pitcher that has the highest ceiling is Matt Latos?
Yeah, I think I could make an argument for Homer Bailey.
Really? Over Latos. Interesting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. You know, Matt Latos and Homer Bailey, I mean, they're pretty similar pitchers. They're both big right-handed pitchers. Matt Latos, I think he's a little bit bigger, but, you know, they're both big right-handed pitchers. Homer Bailey throws a little bit harder. You know, his fastball on average is a little bit harder, and his top-end velocity is a little bit harder. Both of them have, you know, put-away sliders. They, you know, over the last years have both been within the top 10 in value, according to Fangraphs, for all starting pitchers in all of baseball. You know, they both have similar walk and strikeout rates. I really just don't see too much of a difference between the two guys. I guess ceiling-wise, if you wanted to count in, you know, their peak moving forward, because Latos is younger, that, you know, you could give him the edge there. But on a pure stuff and results level, I think that, you know, you could argue either way for either one of those guys.
Well, I guess you can make an argument for Bailey, certainly. But what comes down to me, anyway, is the fact that Latos is a couple years younger and fairly similar pitchers in some ways. Plus, you got to admit this. If Homer Bailey ever wants to become the pitcher or have the same ceiling as Matt Latos, Homer Bailey's got to get a lot more tattoos. He's not even close.
Yeah, but he has that arrow tattoo on his arm.
It's pretty sweet. I agree.
Yeah, I don't know. He's got a long way to go to catch up with Latos on the tattoos. I'll give him that.
Maybe I'm overrating the value of the tattoos. Let's run briefly through the bullpen quickly if we could. And actually, I'm going to amend my previous statement. The starting pitcher on the Red staff who has the highest ceiling is Aroldis Chapman. But I'm not going to get into that whole argument again. Chapman has he struggled a little bit. He's been excellent at other times. What do you think about what we've seen out of Aroldis Chapman out of the closer spot this year?
You know, I know some fans have been concerned. I'm not concerned. You know,
no, me either.
Even the best guys are going to have a few bumps in the road throughout the season. You know, the guy's got 34 strikeouts and 9 walks in 21 innings. His ERA is 3.00. You know, we all know what he's going to do. You know, we're going to look back at the end of the year, and, you know, his ERA is going to be under 3, and he's going to have a whole lot more strikeouts than he does walks in innings pitched. You know, I'm not concerned about anything he's done. You know, sure, I wish he hadn't blown a save here or there, but, you know, going to happen. You know, at the end of the year, he's probably going to have 5 blown saves, just like most other elite closers. You know, that's just how things work. Sometimes the other guys are just better than you on that night, even somebody as good as Aroldis Chapman.
Isn't the fact, though, that he's going to have, and I agree with pretty much everything you said, but isn't the fact that he's going to end up having 5 blown saves, similar to other closers, I mean, and he is, that's the way it works, is that yet another argument for this guy being in the rotation? Do I need to quit beating that dead horse, I guess, is the related question.
Well, you said you weren't going to bring it back up 20 seconds.
I lied.
But I'm with you on that. I think it's a waste of talent. But, you know, it's not my choice and it's not your choice. So, you know, there's nothing at this point that we can do or say about it that we probably haven't already said. We think that it's a bad move, but, you know, it is what it is, and there's nothing that we can really do about it.
And the issue with Chapman, even as closer, if we're going to accept that he's the closer, my issue with him has been, and we're going to get into a little bit of Dusty Baker talk, I guess, here, but has been his usage and the way he gets used as the closer. Frankly, if he's going to be in the bullpen, I'd rather him be the setup guy. Because as setup, Dusty Baker would use him in much more intense situations, more high-leverage situations where you really need an out. As closer, seems like most of the time he's coming in, he's not pitched hardly any against some. We talked earlier about how the Reds are performing against these better teams. He's barely pitched against these better teams. And he's coming in with a 3-run lead or a 2-run lead and nobody on base, 3 outs to go in the 9th inning. And it seems like such a waste of the most talented arm possibly on your staff. I guess we just need to resign ourselves to the fact that he's not going to pitch in very many high-leverage situations.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how Dusty Baker, and unfortunately, just about every manager in baseball, you know, manage their closer's role. You know, outside of Mariano Rivera, I can't think of another relief pitcher that comes in more than, you know, two or three times a year and throws more than one clean inning. You know, they come in with nobody on base to start an inning, and that's just how they use the bullpen now. You know, but Dusty kind of does the same thing with, you know, I mean, his entire bullpen, everybody's got their defined set role, and he's not creative at all with how he uses the bullpen. You know, if there's going to be a lefty coming up, Sean Marshall's going to be there if he's available. And as soon as there's not a lefty up, Marshall's out of the game, despite the fact that Sean Marshall gets out righties just about as good as the right-handers in the bullpen do.
Hold on a second. I have to go beat my head against the wall. Be right back.
But, you know, that's just how Dusty does things, you know. And fortunately for us, we don't have a bad option in our bullpen. His lack of creativity and usage doesn't come back to bite us as often as it would if we didn't have, you know, six or seven really good bullpen arms at this point. You know, there's not exactly what I would call a bad option. There are certainly better options than others, but I don't think that any of them are bad options to go to as far as the way that he's going to use them.
Well, you make an important point, which is that Dusty has this crazy notion of these closers, but I think it's crazy. You think it's crazy. A lot of the what they probably say, bloggers in their mom's basement think it's crazy. But it is the way that almost every manager uses their closer. There are very few managers that would use Aroldis Chapman differently than he's being used. But it makes no sense to me, and I'm preaching to the choir, I know, but to have Chapman, who he's your closer, so you can see that he's the best pitcher you've got in the bullpen. It blows my mind that you can't use him in situations where that talent is more important rather than these sort of simple situations where he's facing the – how many times have we seen facing the 8-9-1 hitters or the 7-8-9 hitters in the ninth inning? And it's just it's a waste. It's a complete waste. But it is what it is. That's how Chapman's going to be used. And, frankly, I'm never going to get over the fact that this guy needs to be used more appropriately. I think it's a huge waste. Now, let's talk about the rest of that bullpen, because you mentioned that there are a bunch of good arms out there, and you're absolutely right that no matter how much Dusty mismanages that bullpen, it gets masked a little bit by the fact that we've got some good pitchers out there. The one guy I want to talk about, and I'm going to absolutely completely concede that I didn't see this coming, didn't think from his minor league numbers that he was going to turn into the kind of pitcher he's turned into, and that's Sam LeCour. LeCour, right now, 1.35 ERA, just absolutely has been outstanding. He strikes out more batters, I guess, than I expected him to strike out. Maybe it's just because I didn't pay as much attention to LeCour because he started in the minor leagues. Didn't pay as much attention because I didn't see him as really a starting prospect on the major league level. Well, he's been good, hasn't he?
He really has. You know, what's his ERA this year? You know, 1.71, I think.
1.35.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, okay. I was looking at the wrong column there. Yeah,
listen,
I mean,
don't underestimate Sam LeCour on this podcast. I won't stand for it.
I'll do my best not to mess up again. but no, I mean, you know, coming up through the minors, he was a starting pitcher. You know, some people said, you know, he's a number five starter. So, you know, he wasn't really, you know, viewed as a big starting pitching prospect or anything. And, you know, everybody knows he throws, you know, 87 to 90 miles an hour. So, you know, even if you put him in the bullpen, people weren't thinking that, you know, oh, well, he's going to be a back into the bullpen kind of guy. And, you know, I think that, you know, more often than not, we're going to be right with a guy like that. But, you know, LeCour has, you know, a really good slider and a really good curveball. I mean, both of those pitches are well above average, and they have been for years. And, you guys just, they don't hit those pitches. So when he can throw those pitches for strikes, you know, the opponents are going to have a lot of trouble. You know, I'm looking at his Fangraphs stats right now, and, you know, he's actually had a below-average fastball. Guys are hitting his fastball, and they have for his entire career. But, you know, he's got two different breaking balls that, you know, pretty much just dominate hitters. And, you know, he relies on those a lot, and, you know, the results is, you know, they've been pretty darn good.
No, they'd definitely be good. And he's a guy that I thought maybe if things broke particularly well for him, he could possibly be a fifth starter in the majors, which maybe shows you that I didn't expect us to have such an incredible starting rotation as we have now. But I didn't see it coming. Our buddies over at omgreds.com, they've been on the Liqueur bandwagon for a long time. And I thought, well, it's just sort of a funny thing, you know. But they were right. This guy, he's been – you're able to bring him in clutch situations where maybe Chapman should be brought in. But you were able to bring him in, and he misses more bats. You talk about it, you know, his fastball, and he misses more bats than I ever imagined he'd miss. His strikeout-to-walk ratio has been – better than anyone, really, other than Chapman in the bullpen. I've watched him and watched him and watched him. I still don't know how he does it.
Well, he mixes stuff well. He's a four-pitch pitcher out of the bullpen. I mean, you just don't see many guys like that.
Right.
And because usually guys that, you know, they can throw hard enough to pitch in the major league bullpen, if they've got four pitches, they can probably start. And it just, you know, Liqueur's just been, you know, that guy that, you know, despite the fact that he probably could have been a number five starter, you know, he got pushed to the bullpen, and, you know, nobody convinced him to, you know, be a two-pitch guy. So, you know, he can really keep guys off balance, and I think that he really uses that well.
Yeah, smart guy like that, able to throw a bunch of different pitches. And truth be told, and maybe it's not the best thing for his career, although it's turned out to be the best thing for the Reds, probably could have been a number five starter somewhere. There are probably a bunch of teams that could have used him as a number five starter. So he's a guy. He's become sort of a fan favorite because of that mustache, I guess. But it's delivered Corky Miller a little bit of a career, the facial hair. But really happy to have him in the Reds bullpen. He's done well. Look quickly at some of these other guys in this bullpen. We talked about Sean Marshall, and I'm not going to mention him much more except to say that I think that's the most underrated member of the Cincinnati Reds. And I don't think it's even close. I don't think fans understand how good Sean Marshall is. And every time I say that, everybody comes back at me with, "Oh, he's terrible. You know, how can you trust that guy? Why is he so underrated? And or am I overrated him?" I guess is the question I would ask you.
No, I think you're right on target with that. I mean, you know, since 2010, you know, he's got a 2.47 ERA. He's got 250 strikeouts and 218 innings. I mean, the guy's really good. And you know, like you said, I think that a lot of people don't appreciate just how good he is.
And one of the people that doesn't appreciate how good he is, in my opinion, is our old buddy Dusty Baker. Sean Marshall, he was injured, I guess, and I worry, we haven't heard the latest, but I worry that he's injured again. He's having some issues with his shoulder, I guess. 11 games he's appeared in this year, but he's only thrown 7 innings pitched. Oh, this guy is not a loogie, a lefty one-out guy. This is a guy that can pitch. Get him in there in these tense situations, these high-leverage situations. Let him throw to the guys that you won't let Chapman throw to. After Chapman, he's the second-best pitcher out there. But we're not going to see that. He's going to be a loogie, isn't he?
Unfortunately, I think he is. You know, and like you said, hopefully he's not injured. You know, I think that if it were something serious, he'd have been put on the DL already. But, you know, with the day off, I think they're going to try and they just wanted to wait and see how it was going to be and how he was going to react. But, you know, hopefully it's just, you know, it was just a day of soreness. And, you know, he's good to go for this upcoming series against the Cubs. But, yeah, I think that no matter what, you know, Dusty looks at him as a guy who, you know, he's only going to use against lefties in most situations. You know, unless it's one of those days where he's got two or three guys in the bullpen that, you know, just aren't available for whatever reason, Sean Marshall's not going to see too many right-handers.
Well, and you mentioned a moment ago, and you here again, and that's sort of what's frustrating about the usage of Sean Marshall, that he's so good against right-handers too. There's really no excuse for not using him for you know, a full inning or even an inning plus, because he's really, really he's capable against all types of hitters. Before we get out of this bullpen, and we spent way more time talking about the Reds pitchers, and I could probably spend another hour because it's a fun little pitching staff. J.J. Hoover, he's another guy that's getting a lot of grief because he started off slowly, I know, but looks to me like Dusty Baker's starting to show a little bit more confidence in J.J. Hoover, and this is a guy that can help this team, am I right?
Absolutely. You know, I've been saying that J.J. Hoover could probably close for most teams, and yeah, I still believe that. You know, he got off to a slow start, like you said, you know, but, you know, since April 8th, J.J. Hoover's got an ERA of 2.40 in 15 innings. You know, it's just been hidden because, you know, he gave up four earned runs in the first week of the season. And as a reliever who, you know, you're not going to get that many innings, it's going to take your ERA a while to recover from something like that. You know, Dusty seems to trust him in high leverage situations, rightfully so, in my opinion. And, you know, he's responded well. I just think that, you know, he's another one of those guys that, you know, even if Dusty Baker doesn't quite use everybody right, you know, he's one of those high leverage, you know, big arms that we can trust out of our bullpen. And, you know, it just really helps, I guess, with the Dusty factor. You can't really screw it up that much.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I'm with you. If it were up to me, I probably would have J.J. Hoover closing right now, because I would let the current closer go be in the starting rotation. But we've already discussed that, and I'm going to try to stay away from it. But you're right. Hoover's quality, if you're on Hoover's case this year, and there are a lot of people that keep tweeting at Red Leg Nation, and probably you too, about how awful J.J. Hoover is every time he comes in the game, lay off this kid. This kid is good, and he's a legitimate Major League reliever. Okay, let's get away from the pitching, if we could, and let's talk about this offense. You know, the offense was weak point from a team last year that still hit pretty well and won the division, but it wasn't the strength of the Reds necessarily last year. This year, this offense has been, by and large, pretty doggone good, and yeah, I just used the word doggone. They've been pretty good and really have a possibility of getting better if you start looking at some of these guys. The two guys that I want to discuss first of all, and the guys that have really been the key to this offense so far and should be the rest of the season, I'm in love with both these guys. Joey Votto, obviously, the greatest hitter that walks the earth, and our new acquisition, the center fielder, quote-unquote center fielder, Shin-Soo Chu. How good have these two guys been?
Well, I think we all knew Joey Votto was, I mean, if not this good, really close to this good. You know, he's hit, you know, better than just about anybody not named Miguel Cabrera in baseball over the past 3 years. So I think that, you know, despite the fact that Joey Votto is still an incredible hitter, that a lot of people expected him to be, you know, an incredible hitter. I know some people have their concerns, you know, coming off of the knee injury, but I wasn't one of those people. I expected Joey Votto to be, you know, pretty close to as good as he's been. But Shin-Soo Chu, while he's always been a above-average hitter, you know, he's been downright incredible this year. You know, he's hitting 300 with a 450 on-base percentage. You know, that's double what the Reds leadoff hitters had last year. That's twice as many times he's been on base. That's just incredible, not just on a personal level, but for how valuable and important it's been to this team and why this offense, or one of the reasons why this offense has been so much better this year than it was last year. He just really turned around, you know, the entire offense because of what he's been able to do in the leadoff spot.
Well, and we discussed that early on that we thought that might be the case, but he has been the quintessential leadoff hitter. Well, actually, I say quintessential, and that's actually not true. He's not the typical leadoff hitter that you saw for 80, 90 years in this game when the managers wanted to put a real quick guy at the top of the lineup, whether he could get on base or not. But in terms of what I think a quintessential leadoff hitter should be, Shin-Soo Chu has been that. He's hitting 300 right now. His on-base percentage, 449. Of course, what you don't expect from the typical leadoff hitter is he's slugging 535. He's got 9 home runs. Leads the Reds in home runs, leadoff hitter. And, you know, that's the key to what this offense is and can be, which is getting guys on base in front of Joey Votto. And, of course, when you got Chu and Votto both getting on base in front of Phillips and Bruce, you start to see this offense really begin to kick into high gear. Shin-Soo Chu, we're going to talk about this later in the season, I know. And I know what the answer is, I'm afraid. But the Reds really need to make a serious, serious effort to re-sign him. And I don't think it'll happen. But they've got to really make a hardcore effort, don't they?
You'd think so. You know, he's been so, so good. But I just don't know that it's going to work out. I hate to say that. You know, as everybody knows, I'm a huge Reds fan. I want them to have the best players, and I think that Shin-Soo Shu is a great player, especially this year. He's a great player. And even if he goes back to what he's been in his entire career, he's still a really good player. But between, you know, what the Reds have, how much money they have, and, you know, this being probably his last shot to, you know, get a big kind of deal, he's going to want to test the free agent market. I just don't know that the two sides are going to be able to work things out to bring him back.
Well, and if I'm going to be honest, intellectually honest with myself, it may not be in the Reds' best interest to bring him back. I mean, Chu is, as you said, he's going to demand a huge contract, and he will have earned that. But, you know, he'll be 31 next year. If you have him playing left field next year, it makes the contract much more palatable. As a center fielder, he's been adequate, but he's not been, you know, a world beater. In center field. As a left fielder, I can handle him. But he's going to be 31. You got to think he's going to begin to decline. It may not be the best idea to give him the long-term, high-dollar contract that he's going to be seeking, that his agent, Scott Boras, is going to be seeking for him, and that he'll probably get from someone. And so you can't fault him if he does go somewhere and cash in on that big payday. But I'd love to see him in the Reds lineup for you. At least the next few years. Now, a guy that is going to be in the Reds lineup for the next decade, you would presume, is Joey Votto. A lot of guys early, and you mentioned him, and we've discussed him just about every time we do one of these podcasts. A lot of Reds fans, oh, no, his knee's still hurting. Oh, it's not the same Joey Votto. Well, we wasted all this money on him. He's not the Joey Votto we expect he'd be. And your response, and mine as well, has been, come on, Joey Votto is Joey Votto. He's going to be fine. And, oh, well, you look up here now, and 47 games into the season, and his OPS over 1,000, OPS plus 177. He's hitting .358. His on-base percentage almost .500. Reds fans need to chill out and every single day enjoy watching Joey Votto, because he is a Hall of Fame caliber batter, and you don't get to see those come around so often. Now, am I entirely off base with saying that?
No, you are not. Outside of Miguel Cabrera, I don't think there's anybody in baseball that is anywhere near the same level of hitter as those two guys. And it's probably been that way for a few years since our Pujols declined a few years ago. I mean, he's still really good, but he's not where he once was, and that's basically where Joey Votto and Miguel Cabrera are right now. You know, they're clear, in a way, the two best hitters in baseball, and nobody's really close to them. You know, the last time the Reds had a hitter this good for any extended period of time, not one of those one-season flukes where a good guy just had a great year, you know, well, the 70s with, you know, maybe Johnny Bench, Pete Rose. And, I mean, and Pete Rose wasn't even the same kind of hitter as Joey Votto. Joe Morgan, yeah. I mean, you know, it's been a long time since somebody this good come through, especially as a hitter. And, you know, you're probably not going to get to see another guy this good at the plate for a long time for the Reds.
And he's a Red. That just, every time I think about that, it amazes me. This is an elite hitter, a guy with a legitimate argument to be the best hitter on earth. He's a Cincinnati Red probably for his career. I mean, that's I enjoy the way he approaches his craft of hitting. And actually, at Red Leg Nation today, I linked to an article by Jerry Krasnick, I guess it was, over at ESPN. They just sort of discussed his approach and how it's such a different approach than most hitters have at the plate. Very cerebral, a guy that really knows what he wants to do at the plate and doesn't take a single at-bat off. Gosh, I love watching Joey Votto every day, and he's in a lot of ways, he's the key to how this offense goes. Now, let's talk about a couple of other guys who have benefited to varying degrees from the fact that they've had Votto and Chu on base in front of them. I'm not going to mention Zach Cozart hitting second because that makes my head hurt. But let's talk about Brandon Phillips and Jay Bruce. Bruce, of course, very hot lately. Brandon Phillips leading the league in RBIs. Those guys are having pretty good years. Bruce, I think, is on his way. He's rising, I guess. What do we expect from Brandon Phillips and Jay Bruce the rest of the season?
Personally, I think that, you know, Jay Bruce is just going to get better. At least his overall numbers from where they're at right now are just going to get better. You know, he's hitting worse than he's hit in a few years. And, you know, he's, you know, getting closer to his prime. So you'd expect him to get better. And, you know, like you said, he has been hitting better as of late. You know, until yesterday, he was leading the National League in doubles. And he started hitting more home runs now. And I think that, you know, that's going to be something we're going to see, you know, now that the weather's heating up a little bit more and he's heating up, you know, he's going to hit a little bit more home runs than, you know, we had seen over the first 6 weeks of the season. Brandon Phillips, you know, I'm not quite sure he's as good as he's been so far. You know, I know he's got a lot of RBI. I'm not even talking about that because that's not something he can really control. You know, whether or not he comes up to the plate with guys on base, I'm sure it's going to help that he's got, you know, two elite on base guys in front of him. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you're just not going to get those opportunities. But I'm not sure that he's going to slug, you know, 464 the rest of the season. You know, his batting average on base percentage, I think that, you know, he's in the right range for where he's going to fall, you know, 284, 330, you know, 10 points either way from there, I think he's going to wind up with. But, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, at age 32, Brandon Phillips has found that power stroke again that, you know, he hasn't had since he hit 30 home runs a few years ago. But, you know, he's been pretty good. I just don't know that he's going to, you know, hit for as much power as he's shown so far.
Let me tell you, Brandon Phillips, if you could guarantee me that at the end of the season he's going to be sort of where he is now, a 284 batting average, 330 on base percentage, 464 slugging percentage, I will take that every day and twice on Sunday out of a 32-year-old second baseman who is still an above-average defensive guy. So very pleased with Phillips. He's not a cleanup hitter, and I wish he weren't hitting there, but very pleased with what he has been able to accomplish thus far. Now, Jay Bruce, on the other hand, obviously had the terrible April, and Jay Bruce is the streakiest hitter on earth, it feels like, sometimes. And his numbers, actually, at this point, are almost identical to Phillips in some respects. Slightly lower, but almost identical. He's been on fire lately, and I hope this is the beginning of an extended stretch where he's going to be hitting well. And let's hope those lows aren't quite as low as they have been when he goes into his slumps, but I expected Bruce to take a huge step forward this year in his age 26 season, and we've not necessarily seen it so far. And I think that if he does not take a bit of a step forward offensively, it kind of hurts this team a little bit as we look towards October, because the Reds really need another big hitter in the middle of that lineup to be a serious contender in October, in my opinion. And it's got to be Jay Bruce. So I'm happy with where Jay Bruce is and where he can be. These streaks that he gets on have really got to sort of even out a little bit. The highs can keep being as high as they have been, but these lows have got to even out some. So we'll look forward to seeing what Bruce does the rest of the season. What's going to happen in left field? It's going to be a while before Ryan Ludwig's back, and Chris Heisey's been awful. There's no other way to describe it. And Xavier Paul has been okay, but I'm afraid he's going to be exposed if he plays too much more. Can the Reds survive until Ludwig gets back with that left-handed platoon?
I think so, but I think so a little bit more than maybe you do, because I'm more sold on Xavier Paul than you. You know, his major league track record hasn't really been good outside of basically his time with the Reds, you know, going back to last year. And even then, you know, it's just under 200 plate appearances. But if you look at his minor league track record, he's always crushed the minor leagues. I mean, absolutely beat up AAA pitching. And basically until he came to the Reds, you know, he hadn't hit as a major leaguer. And the big problem was is he was far too aggressive at the plate. You know, he had always walked in the minor leagues well. And then he'd come up to the major leagues and he wouldn't throw walks. He'd go up there and he'd swing at anything they throw. You know, whether that was a mental game, he was too anxious, you know, because he wanted to prove himself. He wanted to, you know, show the manager, hey, look what I can do. Whatever it was, you know, something was causing him to basically lose that skill that he had shown in the minor leagues. And with the Reds so far, in just under 200 plate appearances over the last two seasons. You know, he's had that plate discipline. You know, he's got on base. He's hit the ball okay. So I think that, you know, the Xavier Fall we're seeing right now is basically the guy that he is. And I think that, you know, he can keep up what he's done so far. Maybe not, you know, quite a 380 on base percentage, but there's something close to it, especially if he doesn't have to face left-handed pitching. I think that they're going to be all right. Not quite as good as what I would have expected out of Ryan Ludwig over a full season, but, you know, good enough to, you know, fill in for him and not be a huge step backwards, in my opinion.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, absolutely. I hope so. I don't have a whole lot of faith in Xavier Paul necessarily, and I guess I'd had more hope for what we would have received from Chris Heisey in terms of production. Let me ask you, because I got in a discussion with some people who are talking about Donald Lutz, who made his major league debut here, and he's done okay as a major leaguer so far in 17 games, 37 plate appearances. Was I incorrect in saying that Donald Lutz is a fourth, fifth outfielder ceiling type guy, that this is not a guy that is going to be a potential starter in the major leagues? Am I off base with that? Should I go back and apologize to the guys I was arguing with on Twitter?
I think you should apologize for it, but with an asterisk. Right now, I don't think that there's any reason to believe that Donald Lutz is a starter. He's not ready right now to start every day. But ceiling-wise, I think that, yeah, you know, he can be a starting left fielder, you know, if things go right for him. Right now, I don't think he's close to being ready to, you know, face, especially major league pitching day in and day out. I think he's far too aggressive at the plate. But, you know, he's got a pretty special bat. You know, when he makes contact, it's really hard contact, and you just don't see that from a lot of guys. And, you know, he's athletic despite his size, you know, for a left fielder. So I think that defensively he can handle left field, and, you know, if things work out right with his bat, that, you know, he definitely could be a starting caliber left fielder.
Well, let's hope so, because he seems like a great guy, and wish him nothing but the best. Let's move quickly, if we could, to the catcher position. I think the last time we talked, Ryan Hennigan had gone out. He's back now, obviously, and we had talked about Devin Mesoraco getting his chance to sort of be the starting guy and a chance to impress and a chance to show that he still needs to be in the conversation. Did Mesoraco prove anything while he was got that chance to start, and does it even matter when Dusty Baker's managing the team?
Wow, those are two very different questions, aren't they?
Yes.
To me, I think that he did prove something, and it's not necessarily what people were expecting him to prove. I think that a lot of people were more concerned about what he would do at the plate rather than behind the plate with his time, you know, because I think that people expected, you know, at one point in his career that he could come up and he could really hit major league pitching, which I still think that he could do, but, you know, he didn't quite do that in his, you know, three and a half week, you know, exposure of, you know, 60-70% playing time. But the pitching staff, you know, more often than not, performed very well when he was on the, or when he was behind the plate catching for them. And I think that that's something that a lot of people had been using as an excuse as for why he wasn't getting as much playing time as some of us were calling for. And, you know, over the long haul of the time that he was behind the plate just about every day, the pitching staff pitched really well with him back there. And I think that it showed certain people that, you know, it isn't always the catcher behind the plate that's making the difference with our pitching staff. That, you know, as long as the guy is capable that's back there, that, you know, our pitchers are going to be good more often than they're not going to be good because, well, they're good pitchers. And that's what stuck out to me the most. You know, I had always felt that Mesoraco was a capable catcher back there, despite what some other people had been trying to tell me. And, you know, that's what stuck out to me. You know, I still think the bat's going to be better than where it's at now. But, you know, sometimes it's going to take more than 3 weeks of continuous playing time for that to show up. I mean, you know, Jay Bruce didn't hit for all of April, and he's been crushing it in May. You know, sometimes it just takes a little bit longer to get things going.
Yeah, and Mesoraco didn't hit terribly, but you point out the one thing that may have helped him win over a few doubters, which is that if there are any questions about his defensive ability, especially with respect to comparison with Ryan Hannigan, at the very least, he may have answered some of those questions. I think this whole catcher ERA nonsense is for the birds and given way too much credence among some talk radio hosts supporters of the Cincinnati Reds, but Mesoraco showed that, hey, he's capable. And that's the word you used, and I think that's the appropriate word. He's capable of handling the job back there. Now, given that he's capable, I guess it's going to be up to him to show that his bat is what we all hoped it would be. And still, I'm with you. I think he still can be. He's just 25 years old. I don't think he – while he may not have answered all the questions that some doubters may have had, he answered a lot of them, and he's capable of handling starting catchers if it comes around. Hopefully, Ryan Hannigan's going to get straightened out of the plate. His numbers, he's shown some signs of that lately, but his numbers are still pretty poor as a hitter. And so, if they're both those guys are playing as well as we hope they can play, it's a pretty good tandem, and could be for the next year or two. Anything else you want to say about the Reds' offense before we move on?
No, because anything else I'd have left to say would be a little bit on the negative side, and I don't want to have any negativity going into this weekend series, so let's just move on forward.
There you go. Yeah, I think there are some things we can maybe talk about. Maybe we will next time around, but let's leave that around because we're in a good mood now. The Reds are winning some games. Let's talk quickly, if we could, spend as much time as you want to on it, but about the minor leagues, which is your area of expertise. And I want you to sort of let us know what's going on the minor league level. But the first thing I want to ask you is if you could speak about our buddy Bill Lack, who's done some incredible interviews. If you guys haven't listened to his interviews the last couple of weeks with a couple of Reds legends, Jim Maloney and Big Red Machine member Fred Norman, they've been fantastic. Well, Bill Lack is going to be sitting down with Tucker Barnhart, one of the prospects in the Red system, who's one of our what we call spotlight players, who's sort of assisted us, helped us out at the Red League Nation, letting us follow him along his career. And he's spoken with us before, and he's written a couple posts. But where are we with Tucker Barnhart? What do we have to look forward to? Is this guy a major leaguer at some point?
Absolutely. I mean, even if he couldn't hit, I think he's a major leaguer at some point because his defense is just that good. He is a good receiver. He works well with the pitchers. And, I just think that, defensively what he brings would be enough to, at the very least, give him a career backup kind of role. He's actually been hitting pretty well this year. He's hitting .276 with a .353 on base percentage and a .397 slugging percentage, heading into the game tonight. I guess the one thing that, I've really been wondering about it a lot this year is, because he's a switch hitter, for those who don't know, how much longer the Reds are going to let him continue to bat right-handed, which is not his more natural side of the plate. This year he's hitting .217 with a .208 on-base percentage because he's got a sack fly and no walks from that side of the plate, and he's slugging .261. And basically that's what he's done for his entire career from the right side of the plate. Low 200s or even lower batting average, and absolutely no power whatsoever from that side of the plate. I wonder if at some point they're going to, ask him if, maybe he just wants to be a left-handed batter all of the time. He's still rather young at 22, so maybe they're going to give it a few more years. Like they say, sometimes a catcher's offense is the last thing to come around. And, overall, he's been really good offensively. I think that maybe it's something that, they'll let him experiment maybe for another year or two, but if he doesn't show improvements, I really do wonder if it's something they're not going to ask him to give up on because, so far as a professional, the results just have not been there at any point to even give the slightest hope that, maybe he'll turn things around, at least from what I'm seeing. Fortunately, from the left side, he does hit, and you're going to face more right-handed pitchers, which would put him in the left side of the batter's box, more often. So I think that at the very worst, he's going to be a major leaguer. Just kind of depends on how his bat develops over the next few years as to, you know, whether that's going to be as, you know, more of a platoon guy or, you know, as a majority of the time catcher.
Well, listen, I'm biased because the two guys that have been very generous with their time for Red Leg Nation have appeared here on this podcast, Red Leg Nation Radio. The two guys really that we really appreciate that have a chance of being legitimate major leaguers, Devin Mesoraco is one of them, who was very kind to us to join us, and Tucker Barnhart. And so I would love to see a day when Mesoraco and Barnhart are Cincinnati Reds and sharing that catching position and excelling. So appreciate those thoughts. Now, what are the other big storylines? No one covers the minor leagues like Doug Gray. What are the other storylines that the rest of us out here should know about what's going on in the minor leagues right now? Let me know. Talk to me. You're the man.
Well, I think that aside from Tony Cingrani, who we've already covered, just because of, you know, his importance to the club, not just this season, but overall, the two biggest guys that I really want to talk about are both in Dayton right now. Right-handed pitcher Robert Stevenson. You know, overall, if you look at his numbers right now, his ERA is 4.02. He's got a 3-3 record. You know, he's had a few hiccups along the way so far this season. But you know,
he was the number one pick. He was the Reds' number one pick, for those of you that don't know, right?
Yes, he was. He went 27th overall in the 2011 draft. And you know, he's got 60 strikeouts and 13 walks and 47 innings for Dayton this year. And aside from Aroldis Chapman, there hasn't been an arm as electric as his come through the system in my lifetime.
Wow.
He's a guy, I've seen him throw live twice this year, and both games he was basically sitting, you know, 95 to 97 late in the game, which I guess late for him is fifth, sixth inning at this point because he's just 20, so they don't let him throw more than 85 pitches in any given start. But, you know, he's hit 101 miles an hour in the past, and he consistently sits in the upper 90s. He's been really, really good as of late. A few starts ago, I guess it was, what day was that? The 8th of May, he apparently decided to try something a little bit different with his mechanics. And, you know, he noted after the game that teammate Sal Romano had actually told him to, you know, maybe go a little bit more with mechanics that he used in high school. And so he said that he did that. And, well, the results were pretty good. He threw 6 shutout innings without a walk and with 9 strikeouts. Easily his best start of the season. The first time he'd gone 6 full innings in a game in his career. The next start out, he gave up 1 earned run in 6 innings with no walks and struck out 7. Last time out, he threw 7 innings, which was a new career high, with 1 walk and 9 strikeouts. I mean, just blowing guys away, elite stuff, elite breaking ball, good changeup, big fastball. You know, I went back and I looked at the mechanics, and really there wasn't much of a difference. He is, in his follow-through, he's not getting quite as flat in his follow-through, but I really haven't seen a difference in the stuff. It's mostly that he's able to control everything a little bit better. And if a guy with his kind of stuff can control the ball and throw it for strikes, it doesn't even have to be where he wants it within the strike zone. It's that good. You know, he's got a chance to be a legit number one shutdown ace, not like number one pitcher, but, you know, full-on ace. There's 5 or 10 guys in the major leagues with that kind of potential. I mean, he's got that kind of stuff. And if he can, you know, get to the point where he can throw strikes consistently, I mean, he's just a really, really, really special arm.
Pretty high praise for a guy that, you know, high school guy, you never know how those guys are going to pan out. Anyone else in the minor leagues that really we need to be paying attention to? Any other big storylines you want to point out?
Yeah, Jesse Winker. He was a first-round supplemental pick last year. He's just 19 years old. Coming into tonight, he was hitting .313 with a .416 on-base percentage and a .537 slugging percentage as a teenager in the Midwest League, which for most people who don't know, it's a pretty pitcher-friendly league, especially early in the season because it's in the Midwest and it's pretty cold in April in most towns in the league. I mean, he has just been obliterating this league, and he got off to a pretty rough start since the 19th of April. Or, well, let's just look at this. going into the 19th of April, he was hitting under 200. And as of right now, he's hitting 313. So since the 19th of April, he's hitting 382 and slugging 667 with 17 walks and 19 strikeouts. 19 years old. It's incredible. I wrote an article on my website last week, and a lot of scouts I've actually talked to and heard from, they want to compare him with Jay Bruce. And I just don't see that. I can see the physical comparison to Jay Bruce. You know, his swing's a little bit like Jay Bruce's. But honestly, I hate to throw this praise on somebody because I just don't know that it's fair. But I see Joey Votto when I watch this kid play. Not so much defensively because they play different positions, but he's the kind of guy that uses the entire field, and he can do it with power to all fields at 19. And, you know, he's got the plate approach. He does not swing at balls. He just won't do it. And, you know, like I said, it's a lot of praise to put on somebody. And, you know, let me put this little caveat out there. I don't think that Joey Votto is the 37 home run guy that he was when he won the MVP. You know, I think Joey Votto is a 25 to 30 home run guy with 40, 45 doubles. And I know some people will disagree with me there, but that's when I think of Joey Votto, that's what I think of. I think that Jesse Winker could be just a slightly lesser version of that. I think this guy can be a 300 hitter who is going to draw you 70, 80 walks in a season and, you know, hit you 40 doubles and 25 to 30 home runs. And he's just, for his age, he's so much more advanced than everybody else at his age. It's unbelievable. Watching the kid play, at the plate at least, he's on a different level than other people his age. And it's been really exciting to watch what he's done so far this year.
Well, that's one thing that, you know, I like to look at with these minor league guys is their plate discipline. You know, are they swinging at balls outside the zone? And that's high praise, frankly, for a guy 19 years old to have some idea of the strike zone. It's a guy with a pretty high ceiling. So certainly that's a guy that bears watching for all you Reds fans out there. Let me go ahead and ask you, because it's sort of the elephant in the room whenever you talk about Reds minor leagues. Billy Hamilton, where are we with his development? And just talk to us about Billy Hamilton.
Well, anybody that follows the minor leagues, even with, you know, just a little bit of, you know, observation, they've seen that Billy Hamilton has struggled this year. You know, going into tonight, he was just hitting 243. You know, he struggled. It's not, there's no way to really beat around the bush. He's not hit well this year. But, you know, he really struggled in April, and he had different hitting mechanics from the left side of the plate this year than he'd had the previous 2 years. And it just wasn't working out for him. He noticed it. I'm assuming the hitting coach noticed it. But early in May, a few days into May, he went back to his old hitting mechanics. And, you know, he's looked better at the plate. The results, they're still, I guess, so-so, but, you know, he's hitting the ball with authority now. And that's just not something that I saw from him just about at all during the entire month of April. I mean, he might have hit three or four balls hard the entire month that I saw. And, you know, so far in May, I mean, he's hitting 282 in May, which is, I mean, that's good. That's something that you want to see out of Billy Hamilton. You know, a guy who can hit 275 to 290. But, he just looks so much more comfortable and better at the plate. You know, he's hitting the bat to the zone a lot quicker than he was before. And I think that, you know, over the course of the season, you know, his numbers are going to get a lot more respectable than they are now. He's hitting better. He's made that adjustment, that change that he needed to make. And I don't think that it was necessarily one where the pitchers were figuring something out against him. They were exploiting something that they saw in him. He had just changed his mechanics, and they just weren't working out for him. I don't know why they changed his mechanics from the left side of the plate, because he did succeed with them, you know, pretty well last year. But, you know, he's gone back to what was working for him last year, and, you know, so far in May, you know, they're working pretty good for him again. He looks more comfortable. He's hitting the ball harder. Things just look better. The one thing is, you know, he's not walking nearly as much as he did last year, and you know, that was a big part of his game. It helped get on base a lot, and obviously with a guy like Billy Hamilton with the speed he's got, you want him on base as much as possible. You know, I didn't think he was ever going to walk, you know, 16% of the time like he did last year. That's something that, you know, Joey Votto-type guys do. You know, if pitchers aren't afraid to throw you strikes, you know, they're not going to walk you that often. And, you know, I think that that's been one of the things that has happened in AAA, that the pitchers have adjusted to him. They're not, you know, too concerned about throwing him strikes. And I think that that's going to help him moving forward, like, in his hitting sets, because, you know, he's going to get more pitches to hit than, you know, he has gotten in the years past, not only because, you know, the pitchers in AAA are better at, you know, throwing pitches in the zone, but, you know, they have less reason to fear him, I guess, and they can also, you know, make that adjustment that they can throw the strikes. And I think that that's actually going to help him develop a little bit quicker now that he's facing more advanced pitching, because he'll get to swing the bat a little bit more at better pitches just because of the competition that he's facing. So I wouldn't be too worried about anything he's done so far this year. You know, if you look at the overall stat line, you know, the numbers don't look good. They're not where you want to see them. But, you know, that's why we watch the games. That's why scouts and, you know, player development people watch the games, because, you know, a little change here or there can make all of the difference in the world. And I think that so far with Billy Hamilton, we've seen just that. If you've been watching him play all year, you know, if you saw him in April, you know, you saw a really bad hitter who was struggling to, you know, hit the ball with any kind of consistency or authority. And, you know, one little change, you know, and he's back to, you know, the guy that we saw last year.
Well, that certainly bears watching for the rest of the year, because there are a lot of people that consider him to be the opening day center fielder for the Cincinnati Reds next year. So we'll see what happens. Anything else with the minors that you want to talk about before we close up shop today?
Well, I'll just throw in one more thing on Billy Hamilton, and then we can get things going. But, you know, I thought I'd talk about his defense a little bit because, you know, as you said, you know, a lot of people do expect him to be the starting center fielder next year. He's been nothing but impressive in the outfield from what I've seen. He shows elite range, which, you know, obviously you'd expect with somebody with his speed. But, you know, he's also getting really good reads on the ball right off of the bat. And, you know, when you couple that with his speed, there are very few guys in baseball that can do the things that he can do in center field as far as, you know, getting to the baseball. You know, in April he made two errors on similar plays where he was going to try and, you know, field a ground ball and throw a runner out at a base or make a throw to the base, and he pulled his glove up a little earlier than he should have, and the ball went by him. But other than that, he has been absolutely downright impressive with what he's done in the outfield. I really can't wait, you know, to see him tracking down baseballs for the Cincinnati Reds in the outfield. It's something that, I mean, I know that everybody was in love with Drew Stubbs' defense, and rightfully so. He's a really good defensive center fielder. I think Billy Hamilton can be better defensively. He's got those kind of abilities in the outfield. And while I expected him to get there eventually, it's been really impressive seeing how quickly he's been able to pick up the position. He's always been a hard worker, but, you know, even with all the hard work in the world, sometimes it takes, you know, a lot of repetitions to get where you need to be. And, you know, he's been able to pick up on things that take guys, you know, months, sometimes even years to pick up on. And you know, he's done it really, really quickly, and it's been really impressive.
That's pretty high praise, certainly on the defensive side for Billy Hamilton. Wow, look forward to seeing him play even more. Well, Doug, I guess it's about time to wrap this show up. So any closing thoughts, anything else you want to add before we call it a night?
Yes. Let's sweep the Cubs, because I can't stand Cubs or Cubs fans in our ballpark.
Oh, man. That's a comment from a guy that's after my own heart. Absolutely. Doug, appreciate you joining us once again for Red Leg Nation Radio. I would ask you all to go to RedLegNation.com, certainly that's our website where we talk about the Reds every day. Go visit Doug over at RedsMinorLeagues.com. Great stuff there every single day. You can keep track of what's going on throughout the Reds organization on a daily basis. You want to follow Doug on Twitter, @DougDirt24. Is that right?
That's right.
Follow Doug on Twitter. Follow us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter, and then, of course, if you want to listen to my dumb nonsense, I don't know why you want to, but if you want to listen to the dumb nonsense that I post, you can follow me at Dotson C, DotsonC. Doug, appreciate you joining us once again.
As always, it's been a pleasure.
Definitely, definitely. Go subscribe via iTunes to Red Leg Nation Radio. Check us out. You can subscribe via RSS as well if you'd like. Really appreciate you doing that. And really appreciate you joining us here. You know, you got a lot of options for your entertainment time. And really appreciate you giving us a download and listening to the dumb stuff we have to say about the Cincinnati Reds. For Doug Gray, this is Chad Dawson saying so long, everyone.